all the tools, the thing you want to start out with is a device called a hierarchy diagram. And a hierarchy diagram is really fairly simple. It's the result of you thinking about it first. And the nice thing about a hierarchy diagram is, and this is the thing I strongly stress, is that it's very simple. And that you want to simply think about it in the simplest terms you possibly can. So if we're dealing with this game called Othello, now you know all you need to know about Othello. One of the basic components of playing the game called Othello. We started out with a little rectangle. You don't need fancy flowchart templates. All you need is a ruler and a pencil. You put the name of the program in the very top box. Now, as I looked at the game, a very simple standpoint, I needed to set the game up for play. I wanted to play until it was done, and then I wanted to close play. Most programs start out exactly that way. If you're dealing with a professional programming concept, it would be initialization, basic record processing, and some kind of program termination. So the middle box is almost always getting a record or getting a response and cranking through the main guts of the program. But that's not all there is to it. So you want to drop down to another level. And normally, once you have established your first three basic levels, you bring lines down and ask yourself, what are the major components in setting up to play the game? And I just write them in here in little boxes. As a matter of fact, this is, in essence, the scratching that I worked from originally. Opening messages. We want to inform somebody how the game is played. Where do you put your pieces? How do we number the board? Who's going to start? This kind of neat stuff. And then setting up the board. Well, you remember that the board was blank except for four pieces originally. If this were a game of chess, which would be a really neat program to write, you'd have certain constraints as to what pieces went where. If it's checkers, you have exactly the same problem. In the program that I had, I decided that there were two ways I wanted to play. Either let the computer be sort of a very dumb board keeper and sit down and have two people play, which is, we all know, is generally the most interesting. Or ultimately, for a little added exercise, or when you were alone, let the computer play. So I decided we'd have a one or two player input. Either two players, in which case the computer simply keeps track of the board and doesn't make any nasty comments when you lose, or one player, where it's actively competing against you. Since we're going to have some kind of player input to this problem, I then want to get the names. Normally, you keep working down in this fashion, starting at the left and following one process all the way down until you get to a stopping point. Now, most people ask, where do you stop? And the answer is, if you were to follow any one of those little processes any farther, if the stuff that you wrote in the boxes came out looking like BASIC, or like Assembler, or like Fortran or COBOL, that's where you'd stop. You always stop, as the initial speaker says, when this is almost just prior to the trivial level. If you go any farther in setting up the board, you end up with four next loops, setting B sub I, J to zero. And if I follow that any farther, I'm writing BASIC. There's no sense in writing programming code twice. This is the planning phase, and it should stop at the planning level. Now, I'm leaving out a chunk here in the middle. I'm going to go right over to the closed play routine, which in essence says, find the winner, sum up all the pieces on the board, print the winner loss, a little congratulatory message, and a sorry, try again, and ask if the person wants to play again. Very simple code. And again, if you drop down any farther, you're writing basic statements. You get sort of a print and a four next going here and another print. So you stop just before you actually write basic. The center level ends up being a little bit more complex. What you're looking at here is a finished document. It's finished, and as soon as I leave, I'm going to throw it away. But in essence, when I originally sat down with the concept of starting the game called Othello, I wanted to just jot scratching down a piece of paper. And again, it's very simple. It doesn't have to be neat or terribly clean the first time you write it, but put in the possible things. Now, one of the possibilities for a player, remember, you have to play your piece at the end of a row that contains your opponent's pieces. As a matter of fact, you have to be adjacent to one of your opponent's pieces, and that row must also contain one of your pieces. So a game could progress to a point where there is no possible move for one or both players. If there's no move for either player, The game is immediately over. You total up the number of pieces and find out who won. If the game is such that one player cannot move, but the other one can, then the computer should tell the other one it's time, hey, for you to move, or else the computer might take a move itself. So the point is, you got to find out if there are any possible moves before you start into one basic sequence. Then you have two possibilities. Player one move, and in my game, player one is always the human. Player two move is either the human or the computer. And the last thing here is a computer move. So these are the three possible things that must happen. Now you'll note, since there aren't any flowchart arrows, there are only lines, there are only process boxes, no decisions, there's a difference between this and a flowchart. A flowchart shows logic, and the key word behind a hierarchy diagram is function. In this setup here, I'd probably find the winner before I printed the winner-loss message, and then I'd probably print the replay message next. In structured code, in going through a hierarchy sequence, you tend to organize things left or right in the order in which they probably will occur. But there is no logic. In this case, I suspect it's probably best illustrated. All the boxes here, whether it's a player one, two, or computer move, have to utilize find the possible move location. They have to follow this or utilize this logic branch. But if you're playing two-player, then the computer move section would not have to be there at all. The point is, at the function level in playing this game, the program has to have the ability of doing these four things. But in a given application, it may not use this, or it may not use this. But this is not a flowchart. A flowchart would show you exactly what you have to use when. This simply says the program had better contain these modules. If it doesn't, it won't work. So the key word there is function, not logic. Very often, I've set out to do a very complex program and jotted down a rough flowchart. And when I finished coding the program to that flowchart, discovered it didn't work. All the things I had coded were there. They were in their logical position, but not all the functions that I wanted were in there, and so the program didn't work properly. This is why a hierarchy diagram is really preferable to a flowchart in many instances. It's also easier to change. One of the things you'll notice that's missing from here, and this is an error that I built in specifically, there's no place up here that says print the board. I guess you're supposed to assume that the programmer or the person playing knows exactly what the computer has in memory. Have you ever taken a flowchart, done a complete application, flowcharted down to the last stop, down to the last terminal, and then somebody came along and says, hey, how do you tell where to do something here? And you look at the flowchart and you can't find it. Ever try to change a flowchart? I suspect we all start out with the concept that flowcharts are good, don't we? Sure. It's kind of like saying mentally taxes are good, right? I mean, where would the country be if we didn't have taxes? Just when you get around to the reality of taxes, you start to hate it. So conceptually, flowcharts are great, but in reality, they stink. A hierarchy diagram on the other end is just boxes. And if you want to change the hierarchy diagram, that's a sprint board. Easily done. Very simply done, as a matter of fact. Hierarchy diagrams, by their very nature, are quite simple to change. Once you've gotten this level, you begin to ask yourself, is finding the possible move trivial? And the answer is probably not. As a matter of fact, most of the things at this level are non-trivial. So you pop on to the next level. You don't have to change colors. What the heck? Some of these are quite simple. Player two move. In essence, says somebody's got a player two has got to input a move. You've got to follow that on the move to find out if it's valid. If it's not valid, you have to have a move error message. If it is valid, you want to make the move. And again, you'll notice this is function, not logic. Because you don't automatically follow the move and automatically print an error message and automatically make the move. The logic of how these things are selected would be done in a flowchart. When you have completely finished your hierarchy diagram, then if you love flowcharts, that's the time to work on them. Look at this and say, that's going to be a son of a gun. Flowchart it. You don't have to flowchart the whole program. Some of this stuff is trivial. I guess once you've done a sequential file process once, you don't need to flowchart it again. So the hierarchy diagram kind of frees you from worrying about flowcharts. You look at these basic steps and say, that's going to be a son of a gun. Flowchart it. I'm not saying throw out flowcharts. I'm saying flowchart work is meaningful and helps you to organize. Well, some of these things are quite similar. Player one move follows move error message, make the move. Looks exactly the same as player two, and that sounds like a good place for a subroutine, a go sub of some kind. Find the possible move, set a move flag. One of the things that was communicated, I suspect, by the earlier lecture, whatever that is. Lecture is the process whereby the notes of the instructor become the notes of the student without passing through the heads of either. I saw that on the board of a hall of higher learning, which remained nameless, SC. The point I'm really trying to get to here is that these things, these boxes, should originally go back to my original concept of sequence. That is one entry, one exit. Now, there's nothing wrong with a subroutine in BASIC, go sub 3800, except that you don't know what the heck 3800 is, but that's trivial. You can take care of the rest with documentation. A subroutine of its nature is almost a perfect structure in that it has one entry point and one exit. And as long as you write to that, you don't ever, and especially you wouldn't have a go-to in the middle of it. So each one of these steps then becomes a BASIC structure. This play until done is some kind of loop. It's probably a loop where you test first, because if there are possible plays, you want to get into the rest of this stuff. So each one of these can basically fit into a structure. Whether or not you have language elements, like a for next that doesn't exactly match a do until, you don't really have an if then else in BASIC. You can accomplish the majority of this stuff by thinking about it first. The last thing I'd kind of like to talk about today is the program itself. And I brought 50 copies of it. It's about 6 pages long. I'll just start them back. There probably won't be enough. And I was also faced with a problem of having to pay air freight for them, too. If you don't get one, my name and address will be in the proceedings. It should be someplace around there. If you want one, send me a buck, and I'll see that you get a copy. And it probably means I'll make money. But I guarantee I'll report it to the IRS. The program itself runs in quite a few pages. And the source listing, if you want it, they say you can get it. If you're, I don't know how far back you're going to get. I expect people in the back may not see it. The point is that within the program itself, I suspect everybody can see fairly well, that there are lots of solid lines here. And these lines really reflect the various major steps in the program. As a matter of fact, I draw my hierarchy diagram. You can have it. It's going to be in the proceedings. It won't be colored. But you'll find in the program a statement that says, set up for play. And the block of code that immediately follows that is the routine that takes care of that statement. Someplace in the program, you'll find a thing that says, follow the move. Also, one of the comment steps, follow the move in the program. What I'm really trying to say to you is it doesn't matter what language you structured code in. Some of us have discovered that it's easy to code structured TL1. It's a little bit more difficult to code structured COBOL. It's an order of magnitude harder to code structured Fortran, and you can't code structured BASIC at all. Well, it's about the same as Fortran. And structured assembler. We'll talk about that. Watch interface age, I'll have something on that in there too, sooner or later. But in essence, what you've really done is you have your structure here, the most important part, the logical structure. When you go through your implementation, what you must do is use whatever the language allows. And BASIC doesn't give you much, but it still does give you the comments and remarks, and you can go through and set your program up. Why structure? Because change is inevitable. If somebody wants to change this program to run on their computer system, all they have to do is walk up to my hierarchy diagram, locate the things that possibly can change, and plug them in. For instance, one that you'll undoubtedly want to change is my computer move. The computer move is simply evaluated very simply. The silly computer scurries around through all the possible computer moves, counts up the number of pieces that could be flipped, picks the maximum, and makes that move. If you want to change that, you've got to find the thing that says computer move, and then find all moves and select best move. You'll find them in the program. Ever got to a program and say, wouldn't it be nice if, and had it this long, and have to learn the program? Structured code gives you two tools. It gives you this, plus it gives you lots of documentation in the comments. And theoretically, knowing this, you'll know where to look, and matching those to the comments you have in the program, you should be able to find and make changes. One of the neat things about Othello, and those of you that have played it, realize that, let me go back to my original diagram here. Some rows are bad. The 7 row down here. Anything that's next to the outside are fairly bad, because if you put one of your pieces in this area, your opponent can get an edge. And in Othello, getting the edge is really getting the edge, because once you've got an edge, really there's no way that anybody can flip that thing back on you. You can't go out beyond the edge. So these things are fairly nice places to get, and these are very bad places to get. Corners are extremely nice. The sophistication of the computer program that you have there simply says it looks for the best possible move and makes it. If that best possible move happens to mean it's going to go to the outside or go to here, it will do it. It also tends to work from this edge back in. And that isn't accomplished in a very sophisticated manner. It's simply that in searching for my highest possible move, I started that corner and worked this way, where the 4 next would indicate. And in looking for the move to make, I simply search my list for highest, and of course the highest is be the last highest advice, tends to dominate this area, which is good computer play. But I've got another model that doesn't embarrassingly lose as badly, and it simply says, avoid wherever possible this row. And I avoid it wherever possible by simply adding a negative number to the total number of pieces flipped if it uses this 7 combination. And I arbitrarily add another number if it can possibly make use of a side. And I add another number if it can possibly make use of a corner. It's very simple to modify. If you have written programs structured, you have thought about it. If you have written programs and structured, you're probably using consistent techniques. If you have written a program and structured programming, you have probably set it up. It's been coded so that it can be modified. You're really one step ahead. I suspect maybe 12, 14 years down the road, we'll come to the point where all the microprocessor programs that have been written will need to be changed more often than they're used. But one of the things we can do is to jump in and solve that problem ahead of time. Well, I've kind of looked at 4 areas. Some of the concepts of structured code, what an if then is, a do while, a do until, most of these things you'll see in the proceedings. We looked a little bit at the game of Othello, and we've looked a little bit at the hierarchy concept of code, and we've also, you'll be able to take on with you a computer program. I really kind of like to close on a little story, and that concerns a chap who was born in Denver, Colorado. Took his early education in the high school there, started 2 years at the Colorado School of Mines, discovered they didn't have a large enough computer system, so he migrated out to UCLA, where, of course, they've got 2 of the biggest in the world. Liked that tremendously. Worked there for quite a long while. Graduated from UCLA. Went on to work at Houston, Manned Space Flight Center. Did so well there, he was attracted by a company in Chicago. Moved to Chicago with his wife and family. Did well there for several years. Made his way up through the hierarchy. Had an offer to move to New York. Fantastic. He had the balance of Chicago versus New York. But he went to New York. He was there 2 years. He died and went to hell. But the change was so gradual, you never noticed. Perhaps if you pick up on some of the concepts in the booklet today, not just from this session, from all the rest, all the people that are interested in programming, which by now should be all of you. One of the early comments that was made was that there's not many programmers out there, but in essence, I look at this room and see a room full of potential programmers. One of the things that we can do, I suspect, is to pick up whatever is best out of everybody else's code. The reason I give this program away is because my response to anybody that says, sell me a program, is, well, it's a gesture. I think one of the biggest problems with home micros is software. And if you are willing to write, and I'm willing to write, and we'll dump it into a magazine someplace, then there'll be lots of it out there available. But I would like to see it the best possible. So when somebody publishes a free program in a magazine, pick it up and read it. Structured code is not simply just writing programs. Structured code is reading programs. I had an advantage when I went to school. It was to learn how to program. But since then, the majority of what I've learned is not from going to a class and taking classes, reading somebody else's code. We transfer so much learning just in reading. Read code. It's the best way to learn. Other than going to a nice place like Citrus College and picking it up firsthand. Thank you very much.